So from group one, how we practice breathing meditation. So a few people shared their answers, and I actually wrote everything down because I proliferate a lot and I won't remember anything. So, so pay attention to the way it feels instead of trying to like force it or, but then for another person, maybe focusing on long, slow breathing, even pause, kind of like yoga type, like pause for a while and then really like, for monkey mind, it works for her to like really follow long and slow. And for another group member, keep the practice as simple as possible. Maintain mindfulness, but things become stiff. And then we'll get to the supportive, helpful resources later. The challenges, the monkey mind, or the other kind of mind that would like to do well in the practice and like go, and get like so serious about the practice. Or like maybe focus so hard, something like that. Another person, not really interested in the breathing. So like how do we practice that when we are not interested? And one really interesting thing, when the mind is already peaceful, when it's curious what to do next, like is there a quote work that we have to do after one is peaceful, the mind is peaceful? The supportive condition and the resources, I feel like these two questions are quite similar and they, for us, like the answers are pretty much overlapping. So the elders' guide has been really helpful. The teaching online, podcasts, books from Ajahn Bhasano, Ajahn Sujito, you know, all the resources that we have. Some people find it really helpful as they do walking meditation and go like left foot, right foot. Or some people chant mantra, budo, even when they are swimming. So like it's really like applicable everywhere. Some people wake up in the morning, walking meditation, qigong, maybe like getting into the body. There's a term, minimats. Minimats, I think George introduced that term. He can explain that. Minimats, like meditation or maybe I'll finish this first. Maybe. Thank you, George. And also, I really like how Elizabeth shared, like, trust the inner wisdom. And another person shared, like, just observing whatever is going on, just observe. And I share one part at the end. I feel like sometimes, especially when the practice is really down, I still practice. And one thing that has helped me a lot is I told myself that even though this is not great, but this is my offering to the Buddha and to my teachers. So I feel like that has really helped me a lot and I can keep going. And I don't remember the sutta, but I think there was a story of a poor lady who had really bad quality food to offer to the Buddha and she felt like this food is so bad, maybe the Buddha wouldn't eat it. But she offered anyway and the Buddha like sat there in front of her and ate right there. And I feel, I always think of that, and I thought the food might be just the water from pickled vegetables or something like that. And I feel like my practice is like there at that level, like really bad, but this is my offering. So I feel like that has been helpful. For questions, some of us, I think C has a question about the sound of silence, and I don't know if C would like to speak after this or she's shaking her head. And Ginny also wonders when she will have some wisdom. So where's Ginny? So I don't know if C or Ginny would like to take the mic.
Well, maybe we can move on to the, for now, just move on to the next presentation.
Group two.
Could somebody from group two, any notable points that weren't already mentioned? Phoebe?
Thank you. Okay. I don't have as detailed notes as Ginger did, but I think I can share a few points. How to practice Anapanasati? We have quite a few varieties here. Of course, the grounding in the body, total awareness. One person says starting out where it's easiest to focus. One person says he has a lot of tension, so he likes to just breathe to dissolve the tension. We also have one person that does the Goenka style with a lot of scanning. And one person does chakra meditation using color, the breathing. What else? But it's quite involved. And she found it very helpful to dissolve emotional pain. She had some personal difficulty in this last few years, and she found that meditation very helpful for her. Challenges. The challenges is one person shared that not really experiencing any joy, piti or sukha, even though she experienced calm. And also about the exhalation being too short. And so this person feels kind of suffocated at first. But she said today is okay, feels like a wave. As for support, what's most supportive is having a regular, consistent practice, have a set schedule at the same time. A few of us feel that living in community enforced by peer pressure is very helpful. Like being here, you know, you have the morning and evening puja and everybody's doing the same thing. And, well, sometimes you don't want to look bad and you want to do like what everybody does. So that's helpful. And it's not just the morning and evening puja, but just the lifestyle in, you know, everything. Included. For the day visitor, they found that seeing a monastic, feeling inspired to practice, you know, even though it's just not living here, but just seeing monastics and get the inspiration. Some people get together with group friends on Zoom and they meet every morning. And so they found it supportive as well. And also just being here and seeing the generosity of all the people, and they feel inspired to go home and try to hold the five precepts while they are living in the world, and that is very supportive for their practice. And one, this kind of fits in here, I'll put it here, is to... One person finds standing meditation very helpful and use that first and transition to sitting. Standing meditation helps settle the mind easier and help with the mindfulness. And then she will continue with the sitting meditation and it's easier. And resources, of course, the Anapanasati Sutta. We all read that and it's very helpful. And Ajahn Suchito's book on breathing like the Buddha and the walking the standing meditation. And also one person found Ajahn Jeff's essays very helpful, which relates to aspects of life and the Buddha's teachings and all the teachers here. And there's another term in Thai, that Dalia, would you like to say that word again? Jolly. Did I say that right? Tukjuri? Okay. Please explain what that means. A good fit. Find the right teacher with a good fit, resonates. And that is very good resources and very supportive as well. And for the last question, any particular question you want to ask? Yes. When is the next study day? And also, can we restart the Upasika group? But with the all-day format, not the half-day that we used to do. So that's all.
Now, Kevin.
I didn't take any notes, so this will probably be quick. As far as the practice, there's a variety of techniques. Some people starting with mindfulness of the breathing at a particular point, like the nose, and going to different places. Seems like many people also felt it helpful to scan the body, kind of going up and down, using aids, mental noting, such as like Budo was common among several people, and kind of helping to keep focus on the breath, and seemed to help to pay attention to the breath energy and kind of, you know, and moving around to different parts of the body. As far as challenges, sticking with it, being able to stay with the breath consistently or the meditation object. After the meal, seemed there was sloth and torpor going on after the meal. That seems to be a theme, probably pretty human that after a meal, especially a big meal at the monastery, that's something that can be common. And going into things that are supportive, sometimes using walking meditation at times, like after the meal, can be supportive. Lampa, Pasano, noted as a very big support, and Kalyanamitta in general, it's very helpful and supportive. Resources and suttas, the Anapanasati Sutta, and the social media, like as far as Zoom and YouTube for the teaching, especially since the pandemic started. Ajahn Jeff's kind of short teachings on working with the breath is also mentioned as being helpful. And as far as particular questions, John had one. I don't know if that would be good for later or if he wanted to mention it. Or should we just go on to the next? At the next period, great. Okay, so, and that's about it.
I also didn't take notes, so practice of mindfulness of breathing. One person uses the 16 steps to help focus the mind. We'll go over it and then maybe refer back to whatever feels the strongest at that time. Another person labels the breathing in and breathing out to just stick with the breath that way. But the big challenge was kind of the chattering mind, and people had great ideas of how they were dealing with that, you know, scanning the body, the Anapanasati Sutta, and let's see. And what has been supportive of the practice? We talked for a while about Kalyanamitas, how important that is for supporting each other, and if not a person, there's a Dhamma talk or a reading a Dhamma book. So that was like a Kalyanamita as well. That was and so, again, resources, the internet, YouTube is quite rich with people to listen to. I know in one case, like I might listen to the news and then I need to balance this out so it's not just all bad news. And the suttas explain everything that's in the news anyway, so that's helpful. And particular suttas like the two arrows. And it's amazing how a sutta will just pop up at an opportune time. Oh, that reminds me of XYZ sutta. It's really nice. And we do have one question, and she'll ask it when that time comes.
Okay, now time for questions. And maybe if you can specify when you ask the question, if there's a particular teacher you would like to ask the question. And maybe we can start with Moria said somebody had a question. I'm not sure who you were saying about. Whoever can ask that question right now. Okay.
Thank you. So after the mind has settled and I'm with the breath, and for me, the boundaries of the body disappear, or the breath starts to be barely perceptible. And I'm wondering when a feeling, not a bodily sensation, a feeling arises. So I work with anxiety, and sometimes I just let that feeling arise. And it's the breath which diffuses it. And I'm wondering, so then it feels as though it has become a sensation only behind the eyes and somewhat in the chest. So is it no longer, I can't tell that it's a feeling anymore. I just am left with a sensation, and as though the breath is kind of moving through that. And it's mostly I work with anxiety, but I've sometimes felt it even in the day, not in meditation, with, say, irritation, and then it goes through the body. Is it no longer a feeling or an emotion then?
Don't try to define things too tightly.
Good, I don't want to. Good, so it doesn't matter is the essential thing.
It doesn't really matter.
Good.
I mean, from a Buddhist scholastic basis, there is a difference in the sense of when we're talking about feeling, because there's a problem with the English language, because feeling is then a constellation of different sensation and emotion. But that's not the case in Pali, in the scriptural language. So when you say the word that generally with feeling, a vedana is just the feeling tone that is experienced, and just in terms of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, and it has a tone to it. And then as it starts to move, it has emotion around it, and then that is more of a mental formation. But it in reality, one doesn't need to be doing. It's like Ajahn Chah said: you don't need to be dissecting all the different steps in the dependent origination. You just have to recognize that it's as if you're falling out of a tree. You don't have to count all the branches as you go down. You just have to know it's going to hurt when you hit the bottom. And so it's like, what do we do to develop the awareness and clarity and dissipating the anxiety or the whatever's clouding the mind, so that there is clarity and an understanding of the stepping back from the creation of dukkha.
So then I can just feel the feeling tone and ask, that's what I was asking at tea the other day, as opposed to kusala and akusala, is it unpleasant, pleasant, and neutral? And just to notice that.
It's just to notice that is fine.
And I don't actually have to label if it's not, if it's weighting the mind down or foggy the mind, foggy or
well,
that's
I mean,
not.
You take note of that, but it's much more returning, taking note of it and returning to the knowing.
The breath. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
I guess this is for Longpa. So in the Anapanasati, there's many, many steps. And I guess if you're, you know, in your meditation and greed, anger, delusions coming up, it may not be so easy to just drop it. And I was just wondering, is there space there for investigation to look at the causes and conditions for that? Greed, anger, and delusion, is that within the steps somewhere?
That's definitely within the steps. And I mean, it's to a certain degree, it's can be included in that element of the investigating, the experiencing the mental formations. I breathe in, calming the mental formations. I breathe out because it's sort of what is sort of what's the mind churning about? Being able to say to calm, to settle, or to make it clear what's happening. So that level of investigation, or the aspect of experiencing the mind. I breathe in, experiencing the mind. I breathe out. That is all. Part of the jitta is actually a very broad term. It covers all of our mental experience. So both in terms of feeling and emotion, and mood and thought. So it covers the whole base. So one can be investigating that one, and of course then the calming and settling of the mind. How do I calm it? How do I settle it? How do I, greed, hatred, and delusion are the hindrances are, because part of Anapanasati is you're also working with the hindrances, and you can pull that in at any state, whether you're using the body as a primary focus of the bodily experience or. Or any other aspect, the lifting up of the investigating of the hindrances is a way, and overcoming of the hindrances is a way of both calming the body as well as calming the mental formations as well as calming the mind. So it can be included in all of that. There's scope and avenue for all of it. Just it depend. There's like a, it's just more like a bit more of a, you have different labels that you can be doing things under. And similarly with the last, paying attention to impermanence, paying attention to sort of the whole desire process and cessation of desire. The aspects of relinquishing and letting go. This contemplation is an ongoing. In order for mindfulness of breathing to be successful, one does need to learn how to be curious, investigate, contemplate, apply wise consideration in a skillful way. And then mindfulness of breathing, it's not just sort of slapping mindfulness of breathing on top of one's experience and then obliterating any obstacle. There needs to be some subtlety and the use of investigation is very important. Okay. Yes, please.
Yeah, what came to mind too is like Longpa was saying, using the different steps, like step
the step on contemplating impermanence, it doesn't just mean breathing in, thinking impermanence, 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 breathing out, thinking impermanence. You get creative with it, and you can breathe in thinking, this too shall pass, this too shall pass, or breathing out, this too shall pass. And then that's actually falls under Anapanasati, but it's making it your own practice. Like if you have a lot of defilements coming up, it's like, this too shall pass, this too shall pass. And then that's contemplating impermanence. It's not just exactly verbatim what each step is saying in the sutta.
Also, something that I think is important to emphasize in working with mindfulness of breathing is that it is not a, it's not a linear practice. I mean, you don't have to start with step one and then work your way to step 16. You can as an exercise, but that's not, you know, you have to work with whatever is actually helpful. So you can, I mean, usually you would start with the, okay, short breath, long breath, just because that's the easiest. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you need to. You can start anywhere and go any which way. The main thing is that it's helpful. Helps to facilitate mindfulness. It helps to facilitate a sense of well-being and clarity. Phoebe.
Actually, Longpo, you just kind of answered my question. I wanted to ask about the steps, if you have to go into like one follow the other, but you just said it doesn't happen in a linear fashion, because some part is very clear. Like you got to be able to notice whether you're breathing long or short, you know, that kind of very basic. But experiencing sukha and piti, you got to be able to calm your bodily sankharas, right? Mm-hmm. But then it's the other tetrads, the third and the fourth, that I'm not clear about. Yeah. Do you have to be able to calm the citta sankhara in order to experience the citta?
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. I mean, it's helpful. It's certainly helpful, but it's not essential. Because also, do you if you're lifting something up for contemplation, then you're starting to work with it as a possibility rather than, this is the step that I'm going to make in concrete. And it's a part of an exploration of this whole realm of experience that mindfulness of breathing is the anchor for. So there's many different ways of approaching the Anapanasati Sutta as a, let's say, as a tool or kind of a guideline for practice.
I guess I actually should flip it the other way from my experience rather than from the view of the sutta. So say I want to see the inner working of my mind. You know, what is it that I'm doing to keep generating certain thought patterns? Mm-hmm. But does my mind need to be really, really calm in order to see that? But see, I asked you from looking at the different steps, but now I'm asking a question based on my own experience. Right. So does it need to be really calm in order to see that? Or is there any way I can start working with that and contemplate impermanence?
Well, the thing is you contemplate on what your experience is and then start using the... I mean, it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
Because if you start investigating,
yeah,
and you get really interested, you'll start to get calm,
mm-hmm.
and then you can work back again and work through. So that there's it's not, again, that's why it's so important to sort of say it's not a linear thing where you've got to get your 4 stars on the long breath before you go to the whole body sort of thing. It's the whole thing is I mean, it's a helpful tool to have a structure to follow, but yeah, you can start using the contemplation of impermanence or dispassion, and then come back and start looking at the mental formations and seeing how or bringing into an experience of gladdening the mind. And it doesn't mean you're just randomly hopping around, but what it does mean is you've got a whole lot of options for exploring the development of this mindfulness of breathing. The main thing that the thread that goes through everything is the in-breath and the out-breath. Breathing in, knowing, breathing out, knowing.
Thank you.
There was a question about the sound of silence. Would somebody like to ask that now, whoever that was?
I'm just like wondering that, like, the sound of silence, like the part of the body too, because like the breathing, like Longpo said this morning, is like really connect to the mind, emotion. If I observe the sound of silence, it's okay or not? Because I just wonder that it's part of the body too or not.
Who are you asking?
Longpo ka.
Well, the thing is I haven't developed the sound of silence meditation. So I want to make that really clear. I haven't ever really used it as a primary object. I played with it. But my root is really mindfulness of breathing. The experience of silence is something that is, you know, much, to me, it's much more, it depends on how one experiences it. But to me, it's much more concerned with the mind, say, like experiencing the mind. I breathe in, experiencing the mind, I breathe out. There's this, the sense of the mind being very still and silent. But, you know, the reality is yes, it is, there's a physical component. Just in that it's a almost a visceral physical sensation of the, because it's there all the time. And it's experienced in the body, and so it's something that is an object that one can attend to. But yeah, as I said, I haven't ever really, really seriously developed it.
And there's a question from Jeannie. When will I get wisdom? Longpo, do you have anyone? Longpo, you have any comments on that? Or?
Huh? Where?
Jeannie was asking, when will I get wisdom?
Jeannie.
Yeah.
Jeannie was asking.
Actually, I would like to expand that question. When we tam du tam ru observing, how can we not exhausted from observing? Because dealing with the monkey mind to hop everywhere and it's not easy to observe a lot of stop of the mind and stopping mm-hmm. everywhere yeah. and jumping everywhere.
Yeah.
How can we not get too exhausted?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good practical question. In terms of, when do we get wisdom? Then it's there's no timeline. It's sort of when just being patient and putting in all the right conditions, being patient, putting attention on the practice, giving oneself to the practice, but the that sense of the tiring. I think one of the things that's always that I return to that I found really helpful in terms of the the way that the mind gets kind of tired and sort of frazzled from trying to be mindful, trying to be peaceful, is really returning to the body. Because the mind is always trying to figure things out, trying to make sense, trying to understand. And on a certain level, it's really beyond that level of mind anyway. So it's much more useful to just come back to the body and relax into the physical sensation of the rhythm of the breath. The physical sensation of how we hold the body, just relaxing, like as we're sitting, just really relaxing the area around the forehead, the face, the eyes, the jaw, really softening and calming and settling, relaxing in the shoulders and the chest. Relaxing the abdomen, letting the breath really come down into the abdomen, so that there's a easeful deep breath coming in and going out, relaxing into the posture of the lower back and the legs, and just really settling into the body, and then staying with that process of relaxing and settling, tamdu, tamru. So it's like watching and knowing, staying with the quality of knowing. It's that quality of knowing that starts to gain a better picture or feel for the Dhamma rather than all our attempts to figure it out on a rational intellectual basis.
One more question, if anyone has one. If there's no more questions.
Okay. Then, according to the schedule, I'm supposed to wrap it up. So I think one of the best things to do is to wrap it up with, we'll finish with a sit, but I'll give a bit of guidance and we'll wrap up with a sit and then close with a dedication of sharing your blessings. Okay, so just as I was mentioning to Ginny, and Ajahn Kurun Dhammo used the phrase, this is an embodied practice. really grounding experience and awareness in the body, because it sometimes meditation and quote unquote spiritual practice can end up being really disembodied. This is sort of a ideas and concepts that are just floating around with nothing anchoring them. So that the experience of the body, grounding that awareness and attending to our experience of the in-breath and the out-breath, again, not as a concept or an idea, but as an experience. Just what does it really feel like? And this is something that, as I remember Ajahn Chah one time saying, you know, the language of Dhamma is a language of feeling. And so I'd say both in terms of experience as well as its feeling tone, but just that coming back to a felt sense of our experience, so breathing in, breathing out, but staying with the knowing, staying with awareness, and breathing in, just really knowing, clearing. Clear knowing, not forcing some kind of clarity as an idea, but just being clear in this present moment, being with the knowing. And then we can be using a contemplation, but those contemplations are not just, again, they're not intellectual and rational analyses of things. It's just observing. Like the last section of the Anapanasati Sutta is just contemplating. But the word that the Buddha uses for contemplating is anupassana, anicca anupassana. Upassana is to see, so it's like seeing, and seeing. You're following on with that seeing. Anu is to following on as well. So there's a sense of following on with this seeing, following through a theme of, say, impermanence, uncertainty, change, contemplation, observing. What is it? What does it feel like? What's that experience like? How's it manifest? As just so being alert and present to the experience of impermanence, being alert and present, contemplating in that sense of knowing and seeing. The fading of passion, and that you realize that the more we follow desire, the more we follow passion, the more we follow our craving, the more tired and frustrated we feel, and so just allowing that that the cooling of passion, this dispassion, is not an act of squelching, but it's sort of like seeing clearly, observing, how's that work? And you see, that's it, that it's not a it's not a successful strategy for well-being and happiness. And so that's through observing and seeing more clearly that we're able to allow that passion, that desire, that craving to become cool. And that's what, say, dispassion is, a cooling. The cessation, ending, recognizing, yeah, everything that has a beginning has an end. And when things end, there's some space opens up. And just pay attention to that space. It's like paying attention to that silence. So what's it? What does the ending of a thought feel like? To observe that closely, to experience it, and then allow that sense of space to open up, sense of silence to stillness to be experienced. And yes, it's just it could be just a tiny little flash, but it's those tiny experiences that we build on, because they're true experiences. These are realities that we can live with and become more familiar and become more comfortable with. And that's why that contemplating, observing, watching and knowing, we start to get a sense of what's a fruitful direction, an actual fruitful strategy for freeing the heart from its entanglements. And then that sense of relinquishing, letting go, not holding on to, just releasing things that we've been hanging on to and clinging to, and investing our kind of attachment and clinging towards, just allowing that to dissipate. But it is dissipated in the quality of knowing, and that's your anchor, and you're using the breath as a means of letting that anchor, that foundation, become more and more solid, more and more clear. So we can maybe just sit quietly, delight in the fact that we've been practicing together, sharing time and space with each other, and I'll ring the bell in about, I don't know, 10-15 minutes.